If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey all, before we get started, a quick warning that this episode does have explicit language, as well as graphic descriptions of violence, and it may not be appropriate for kids. On January 28, 1968, Jack Murphy was arrested after a botched robbery devolved into a gunfight with the Miami police. The officers soon discovered that the man they'd arrested was not only the infamous Murph the Surf jewel thief they'd once seen on the news, but he was the same Jack Murphy that was out on bail in connection with a murder investigation. And not just any murder investigation, but the high-profile double homicide where, just over a month earlier, two young women were found shot, bludgeoned, and stabbed, weighed down by cement blocks in the waters of Whiskey Creek. Jack claimed his innocence then, and he claims it now. And in this episode of The Sneak, he'll walk us through what he says happened at Whiskey Creek. My name is Nate Scott. I'm a reporter and editor with For the Win and USA Today Sports. This is The Sneak. In our sit-down interview this past winter, Jack took his time describing his life in Miami Beach, the Star of India heist that made him famous, and his work in prisons, preaching to inmates all over the world. The interview lasted well over 4 hours. Jack took his time on just about every chapter of his life, except one. He was eager to fast forward from Rikers Island to the subsequent prison sentence and his salvation. But we couldn't skip over what happened in between.
I want to get to prison. I want to get to that second stint which saved your life. Before we do that, though, we have to get to prison, which was Whiskey Creek.
So when I got back to Miami, the first thing that I did when I hit home, when I got to the airport and I had a buddy pick me up, I didn't go over to see friends or family or I went and got a pistol.
You've heard this part before, about how Jack came out of Rikers Island mad because he felt his friends had ignored him while he was locked up. But there was something else that happened after the Star of India heist too. Jack lost someone very close to him. Sorry for the cut-in audio here. Our sound engineer had stepped out for a second, then turned the recorder back on.
And another old girlfriend of mine showed up. That
I'm sorry to interrupt you for a second.
Yeah.
Did we miss something important?
No, we're just chatting.
This other girl and I were out at a concert one night, and I get a call from a friend said, "Hey, listen, Bonnie's killed herself in the hospital or something, and she died."
Bonnie is Bonnie Lou Sutera, Jack's girlfriend at the time of the Star of India heist.
So that was Bonnie, and right now a younger sister is in contact with me because she never got to meet Bonnie, and so we're doing a story on Bonnie. Yeah, it's just kind of weird, neat stuff. Yeah,
that's another habit of Jack's right there. He'll tell you something horrifying about his life, the suicide of a beloved girlfriend, or the supposed gang-style murder of multiple people in Boston, and then dismiss it with a, "it was a fascinating time," or "it was just kind of weird, neat stuff." And trying to get him to talk about how those events made him feel? No chance. Jack doesn't discuss that stuff. Ever. One reporter told us that Jack blew up at him for trying to talk about the, quote, "psychologicals." Jack never blew up at us exactly, but Jack doesn't talk about his feelings, really, other than gratitude for his Lord and Savior. But let's get back to 1967. Jack was out of prison and back in Miami.
I was working, and then I got a job a buddy of mine had a surfboard factory. And so I could party all night long, go out and lay on the sun all day. And then I'd go at night and I'd get like $25 for shaping a surfboard. Well, I'd go at night and I'd shape 10 of those. I never liked to be beholden to this day.
Jack tried playing it straight, did a bit of traveling across the country with some acrobat diving, all clean living. But then an opportunity presented itself. And for whatever reason, he didn't hesitate.
I'm going to California. I'm going to go out and go surfing, go see some buddies of mine. And somebody had some work that they needed done in San Francisco. It was Ashbury was cranking. The whole thing, the whole acid thing was cranking and all. And so I go out there and do some dirty work and some crazy work. And now I've got money. I've got everything. I go down and see my dad for a couple hours, and then I go to Los Angeles. And
I'd asked Jack Murphy about Whiskey Creek, and as you can tell, he's taking his time getting there.
I'm going down there, and I'm staying with some guys who do surfing movies, and I'm meeting all the crowd.
At this point in the interview, several hours in, Jack's demeanor had begun to change. We were drifting towards the uncomfortable waters of Whiskey Creek, and we could all feel it. Our small hotel room felt even smaller somehow. The air was tight. Jack was no longer making eye contact with us. And the tension makes sense. Jack doesn't talk about Whiskey Creek. His autobiography? It's not in there. The Murph the Surf film makes no mention of Whiskey Creek at all. Jack didn't really talk about Whiskey Creek with the New York Times, not because the reporting wasn't thorough, but because Whiskey Creek hadn't been the focus of the story. The heist was the story, because the heist has always been the story. But to tell Jack Murphy's story, we have to talk about it. He seems to understand that now. And despite his initial hesitation, and despite the growing tension, he kept going.
I get involved with some dudes that's had a big robbery to do. They couldn't do it because they couldn't get in this mansion, and it was in a very wealthy area. And so I'm sitting drinking beer with them. So you want to do something? Let's do it.
Jack hadn't been out long, but he was already back in the thieving world. And now he was branching out. He says he got involved in moving drugs.
So a guy sets me up with some other people, and so we go take them off. We take them down, and so we get a drug score, big drug score. And we have 350 pounds of drug. We have 80,000 Dixies, and we have meth, and we've got all kind of stuff. And so I end up putting it in a big steamer truck and sending it to Miami. I've got it out sitting on top of my car with surfboards and all.
Jack often talks about his life as if he had no control over it. It's as if he were a wave, just rolling in and out, crashing where the tide takes him. But all waves in this story seem to crash back to Florida. And in this chapter, in this wave, it started with a phone call.
I get a call from a buddy of mine. He said, listen, there's some women here to see you.
The buddy was a man named Milton Skippy Thompson, a friend from Miami. The women were named Terry Kent Frank and Annalie Marie Moan.
I said, who? He said, I don't know. He said, they came and they said that they were supposed to run into you, that your partners met them out in L.A., and they were supposed to come and see you. I said, what for? Because I've got a girlfriend now.
The women weren't looking for a boyfriend, however. According to reports at the time, the two women had worked at a financial firm in Los Angeles and had stolen $488,000 in negotiable stocks. And according to Sonny Gretsch, one of Jack's accomplices on the Wofford case who we met last episode, the women got the idea from someone else.
What happened was Alan got some girls to steal some supposedly marketable bonds or stocks worth millions of dollars from this guy's account in California.
Alan is Alan Kuhn, Jack Murphy's accomplice during the Star of India heist. According to Sonny, Alan had met the women and convinced them to pull off the deed. Also, you might have noticed the disparity in numbers there. The reports we read said the women had stolen $488,000. Sonny had it in the millions. The real number? We'll get back to that. For now, let's go back to Jack, getting a call from his friend Skippy, asking to meet with the two women.
Guy Skippy said, I don't know what, but they're getting a little edgy. So I tried to put it off, and finally, a few days later, I go over there, hey, what's going on? They said, well, we met Alan, and we met Bobby, and we have something. They said that you could move it.
Bobby is Bobby Greenwood, another friend and accomplice of Jack and Sonny's.
I said, what do you got? So they bring out two manila envelopes, big, thick manila envelopes. And they had worked in a big stock brokerage house. And they told Alan and Bobby, they said, well, yeah, we work in there. We put all the stuff in the portfolios and such. And he said, well, can you get any of that? Yeah.
Bobby Greenwood would eventually pay for his involvement in the deal. Here's from our interview with him.
I got 5 years for that.
You did? Just for...
For the stock. They said that I moved the stocks from one place to another, which I didn't. But in them days, they could do that.
Interesting. Because Jack told us he gave the stocks to a bunch of people because he just didn't know what to do. No one knew what to do with them.
We didn't know what to do with it. We can read what we call read a score, which is jewelry, you know. But stocks, no.
Let's go back to Jack.
So anyway, I don't know anything to this day about stocks and bonds. I don't know how to read the stock market. I never had any in my life. So I go to my attorneys, who are all heavyweight underworld attorneys, and they hook me up with some people. I get a guy that works for the stock market. He comes in and he reads everything. He reads it, and I have $997,000 worth of negotiable stocks.
In all the reports and legal filings we'd read, the number was $488,000. Sonny had it in the millions, but Jack maintains it was $997,000. Whatever it was, Jack says he went to the underworld attorneys because he didn't know what to do with the stocks. Sonny Gretch, however, says the initial approach to moving the stocks was a bit more ad hoc.
Jack Murphy ends up in Miami with these bonds and starts giving them to people. Here, Sonny, go sell this $1 million. Jack, you go get rid of these, you know, you get rid of this million. Here, and kind of gave out. And it wasn't my bag. I didn't know what to do with them. And I ended up taking these bonds and stashing them in a bathroom in a bar somewhere. I think I put them in the ceiling.
Jack was saying that he was having a lot of trouble moving them because he didn't know anyone who knew what to do with them.
He gave them every, and none of us knew what to do with them.
Eventually, Jack says the lawyers put him in touch with other people who then connected him with another man, a man who he wouldn't name.
And they said, well, we know a guy that's connected and knows people in New York and Atlanta. And he just got out of prison, and he's a mover. He came out of federal prison. So I meet this guy, and he said, yeah, I can take care of that.
Jack figured he would connect the man with the women and let them sort it all out. In the meantime, however, Jack says the women were starting to get antsy. They'd handed over these stocks, which were worth somewhere between $400,000 and millions, and they'd received nothing. And, Jack says, they didn't understand that when you stole something, you weren't going to get the full value for it.
In that transformation of money in that situation, a thief will average get 19%. 90% of $1 million works pretty good for somebody drinking beer and popcorn, right?
It makes sense that Annalie Marie Moan and Terry Kent Frank didn't know much about what kind of cut you get from a huge robbery. Frank was described as having a little bit of a wild streak and had a forgery conviction, but that was the only record between the two of them. These weren't hardened criminals like the men down in Miami. They were secretaries. Terry Kent Frank was 23 years old. She had grown up in a suburb of Cincinnati and had been married young. By 1967, though, she had been estranged from her husband, Bill Frank, and was at that time making a new life in Los Angeles. It was there that she connected with Annalie Marie Moan, who worked alongside her as a secretary at a Los Angeles brokerage house. Moan was born to a German mother and emigrated to the States when she was young. When all this went down, she was just 21 years old. The two were by all accounts young, attractive, having fun working and living it up in Los Angeles. Then, according to Sonny anyway, they met Alan Kuhn, and he convinced them to steal hundreds of thousands of dollars. We should note, before he passed, Allen said that it was Jack who first met the women and convinced them to do the deed. Whatever the order, eventually the women did get connected with Jack Murphy. And then, according to Jack, he connected them with this unnamed man. There's someone else we have to tell you about, though. Another Jack. Jack Griffith.
All American Tiger Woods is a new documentary podcast from Stitcher. We all know Tiger, of course. He's one of the biggest sports stars of all time, and we've all heard his story. A crazy ride to success, a shocking fall from grace, and of course, an epic comeback. I don't know about you, but I remember seeing Tiger play for the first time, and he was so good. It was different from any golfer I'd ever seen. But there is so much more to Tiger's story than most of us know. All American will reflect on Tiger's rise to greatness, what his iconic status means within American culture, and how we define our sports heroes. 2020 really feels like the perfect time to revisit Tiger's story, as America is working through and examining aspects of race, identity, and so much more. You do not want to miss this show, whether you're a documentary fan, a sports fan, or you just want a good story. Check out All American, Tiger Woods. You can find it now in your favorite podcast app, and make sure to subscribe and favorite.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling t-shirts from a booth at your local farmer's market or dishing out handmade crafts online, Shopify's POS system manages it all. Unite your in-person and online business with a trusted platform that supports your retail hustle. Get started with hardware tailored to your needs, from payments on the go to full-scale retail setups, with round-the-clock support to keep your sales smooth as silk. Do the smart thing for retail. Go with Shopify. For a limited time, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/wondery, all lowercase. Take your business to new heights. Visit shopify.com/wondery today. That's shopify.com/wondery.
Did Jack mention any names to you?
A lot of names.
Did he? Did he say names? God, I don't know if I should mention anybody's name.
That's the voice of Sonny Gretch again. Well, he told us about Bobby Greenwood. He told us about you, Bobby G, Allen. A lot of...
How about Jack? Jack Griffith?
Jack Griffith, yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, I was better friends with Jack Griffith.
Jack Griffith was a jewel thief working in Miami at the time. He was partners, for a while, with Sonny Gretch. He was also friends with Jack Murphy. Can you tell me a bit about Jack Griffith? You're the first person I've talked to who actually knew him well, other than Jack Murphy.
Jack was a piece of work. He had a real easy heart, but a real dangerous dude. I mean... he had a black belt in karate before anybody knew what the word karate was. I mean, he actually studied in the Orient, and didn't look like an athlete. He was stocky, overweight, but just a real dangerous dude.
Jack Griffith passed away in 2009, so we weren't able to ask him how he first got involved in this saga. Here's what we do know. In early December 1967, Jack Murphy organized a boat ride. He says it was to talk over what to do with the stolen stocks, just a way to smooth things over and explain to the girls what kind of cut they would expect. The people on the boat, Jack says, would be him, Terry Kent Frank, Annalie Marie Moan, Jack Griffith, and the unnamed man.
So we're in the boat, and we're doing that. We're going along. Everybody's having a great time. I'm driving the boat, and it's a 30-foot boat. Nice thing, and everybody's in the back, comfortable and all. And so this dude, that's sort of the player in all this, he's a cokehead, and everybody in my crowd does coke, you know. But he's horning strong, and so and he's kind of a nervous character. He's an Italian dude.
Jack says things were going well enough until it came time to talk business.
They're sitting in the boat, and we're up in Hollywood now, because we've gone inland the waterway. We're just cruising up. We're going up to Fort Lauderdale is where we're going. And they're talking, and this one girl got real nasty.
Jack says that the two women reiterated how they were growing impatient with how long it was taking to move the stocks and frustrated with how small a cut they would get. Then, he says, one of the women made a very bad mistake.
She threatened. She said, I'll tell you what. She says, we were told that we would get some money and blah, 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 this and that and the other. And if we don't start getting some money, she says, if we don't get some money by tomorrow, she says, I'm going to the FBI. Wrong thing to say. Wrong thing to say in the world I live in. Within 30 seconds, they're both dead.
The two women were gone, shot, Jack says, by the unnamed man who Murphy had just met. Jack says he and Jack Griffith knew they needed to act quickly to clean up the scene.
And he's looking at me like, I had some blankets, had some towels, cover them up. And so I've got this nightmare going on.
According to Jack, the men decided to get the boat out of the crowded waterway.
Well, I go up an area, you go out of Hollywood, you go into Hallandale, Hollywood. Then there's an area where there's not a lot of hotels or rooms. There's just an area of mangrove swamps on one side and dead end street on the other side. We're up there, so I go into the mangrove swamps.
Jack paused here to recount the time he told this same story to former Florida Governor Rick Scott during a hearing to restore Jack's rights in 2012.
The governor asked me a couple of years ago, I was up for a clemency hearing, and I told him the same story. And I said, Governor, I said, you know what? No one has ever asked me what happened, because the attorneys wouldn't ask me, and the police know not to talk to me. He said, well, what'd you do? I said, I did what I had to do. I had to clean up the mess. And he said, well, why didn't you go to the police? And I said, Governor, with all respect, I said, at that time in my life, that wasn't an option of mine.
On December 8th, 1967, Terry Kent Frank and Annalee Marie Moan's bodies were found in Whiskey Creek. They had both been bludgeoned, Moan had been shot, and both were weighed down by concrete blocks lashed to their necks. The women had been stabbed in the stomach, which some at the time theorized was a way to ensure they didn't float to the surface.
A few days later, they find the bodies and all, and a few days later, word comes in, and there's suspicion on my partner because he said something in a bar to somebody that the bartender heard. Hey, we had to dump some chicks in the water.
Jack Murphy and Jack Griffith were brought in for questioning by Hollywood police. With much of the evidence circumstantial, the two men were eventually released on bail, but police were keeping tabs on Jack Murphy and Jack Griffith. The unnamed man, the fifth person on the boat, however, wasn't on their radar. We asked Jack what happened to that fifth man.
So wait, sorry.
On the boat.
That person's never been named.
No, because he had an accident also. And so they asked me, well, where were you? I said, I happened to be sitting in Fort Lauderdale jail when he had an accident. I was playing chess with some guys on there because they have the date and all. And what happened with him is my girlfriend worked in a bar where Sinatra used to come in, and then my partner, the karate guy, Karate Jack Griffith. Jack Griffith was a real karate guy. He was the first Nidan in America. Nidan is a third-degree black belt. Well, anyway, his mother worked in a bar, and Jack and I had been in the papers. We'd been indicted and all, and she said, this guy keeps coming in the bar. She said, I get real weird vibes when he comes in. He's sitting down there and he looks at me. And so my girlfriend was saying the same thing. She said, I don't know what he's doing. He comes in here and he has a couple of drinks in there with sort of a mean attitude and all.
According to Murphy, the man kept coming to the bar where Jack Griffith's mother, as well as Jack Murphy's girlfriend, worked. And with the man spooking the two women, Jack says he saw to it from prison that there was a, quote, accident.
So anyway, he ended up having an accident and solve that problem. You got to solve problems, you know.
And that was how this unnamed man disappeared. But there were still things we didn't understand.
I just want to understand, because I've read so many different things and there's all this stuff. You and Jack Griffith, you took care of that other guy. Why not just tell the police and FBI, we had nothing to do with it, it was him? Why not name him?
They don't care. They don't want to listen. They don't care. They got a conviction out of me. They don't care to know anything. And the thing is, I found out that if you make large decisions in your life, you don't have to make a lot of small decisions. I made a big decision in my life that under no circumstance, at anywhere or any time, am I going to rat anybody out. If you want to hang with my crowd, we make the big decision that under no circumstance will we get involved in any of that stuff there. We're not going to rat on anybody. We're not going to mess with the kids over there. And we're not going to whine and complain. We're going to do our time and do it like a man.
The unnamed man, the one Jack says pulled the trigger, was gone. Jack, on the other hand, would head to court, where he would be tried for murder. And it was there that his lawyer came up with a new strategy.
Now we're locked up, and we're getting ready to go to lots of courts in Fort Lauderdale and Miami. We're getting ready to do federal courts. We're getting ready to do jails and state hospitals, because my attorney said, we got to go crazy.
Jack Murphy, accused of murdering two women, would plead not guilty by reason of insanity. We'll get to that next episode, but before we end here, I want to take a moment to briefly discuss the two women Jack was accused of murdering, Annalee Marie Moan and Terry Kent Frank. Actually, I want to apologize. So far in this podcast, we've told you very little about these two women. I'm ashamed of this. These women had their lives cut short, and they deserve more than to be a footnote in someone else's story. I will say, we're not doing this intentionally. We just don't know very much about Annalee Marie Moan or Terry Kent Frank. We've been researching this podcast for months. We've read just about every news story written about the case, countless legal documents, sat through YouTube videos and a feature film. And sadly, we still know very little about these two women. We can tell you the basic biographical details we gave you earlier, where they were from, parents' names, and the fact that they worked together in Los Angeles. But other than that, not much. We have worked hard to find people who knew these two women, and up to this point, we've come up empty. But we may have something now. This week, our researcher Emily actually tracked down a photograph of Annalee Marie Moan's gravestone. Annalee was buried alongside a man named Moulton Lyles, who we believe was her stepfather. And while Moulton passed away years ago, the gravestone has an empty space, reserved for Anna Lyles. We believe that's Annalee's mother. And according to that photo at least, Anna Lyles might still be alive. Coming up in season 2 of The Sneak, we'll go looking for her. And we'll discover that Jack Murphy's story, the one he told us about Whiskey Creek, might not add up.
Hey, Nate, he's been lying through his ass. I mean, you can do whatever you want, but he's lying through his ass.
The Sneak is a production of For the Win and USA Today. It is written and produced by myself, along with Anthony Pacillo. Our field recordist is Gustavo Moeller, and our music supervisor and audio engineer is Claire Morgan of Nodderly. Research by Emily Lacaze. Video and image work from Emmanuel Lozano and Alyssa Williams. Our executives are Mark Hyland, Scott Stein, and Kate Gutman. Special thanks to the USA Today podcast squad, Shannon Green and Claire Thornton, and the crew at Wondery, especially our marketing wizard, Alex Carpenter. Additional thanks to the investigative team at the Naples Daily News for their help with reporting, and the amazing team at Miami-Dade College's Wolfson Archives, who provided our archival footage.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.